Well, good morning, everyone. I have the privilege today of introducing two of Asbury's finest right up here. First of all, we have Brian Bennett, who is a member of the Empowered class. Give him a shout out. Now, Brian serves on the EC this year as a VP for Student Activities. So basically, his job is to make your life more exciting. And though he is responsible for campus mayhem, Brian also takes time out of his daily life to enjoy nature. In fact, after his junior year, he spent his entire summer studying the wondrous mysteries of grass. So he leads an exciting life. Brian is described as being patient, smart, and humble. He is admired on campus for his ability to make his peers feel respected and appreciated. Secondly, we have Meredith Colley, who is a member of the Consecrated class, and she will be graduating in the spring. She serves as the RLC for Glide Crawford, and she is known by many as simply Barb. Meredith is the hardest working person that I know. She's always working out, studying, writing a paper for Dr. Harlan Bacchus, or having a heartwarming community hours conversations with one of her residents. I consider Meredith's dorm room to be my second home. I always feel welcome there. I don't know whether or not I am welcome there, but I feel welcome there. And the wonderful thing about Meredith is that her personality makes you feel at home. You can't really have a conversation with her without leaving feeling refreshed and rejuvenated and ready to take on the day. So I'm really excited to hear what both of our speakers have to say, and please join me in welcoming Brian Bennett.
You can laugh all you want, but I had a great summer. So, man, there are a lot of people here. Good morning. Like Emily said, my name is Brian Bennett. I'm a senior. And I never imagined I would be able to stand here and talk to 1,300 people someday. So it really was an honor to be asked, and I feel privileged that I was even thought of for a student chapel nonetheless. So before we start, I feel like it's appropriate to tell you a little bit more about myself so you get comfortable with me and I get comfortable with talking, and so just bear with me for a minute. Like you said, I'm a biology secondary ed major, so I do all the teaching stuff as well. I'm graduating in May, but I have to student teach in the fall, so you'll probably still see me around. I've lived in the dorms my whole life, so for all you freshmen who want to get out of the dorms, never do it. It's the best place in the world. Aldersgate doesn't compare. On a more personal note, I love being outside. I like taking pictures. I like music. I love movies. Battlestar Galactica is one of the best shows on television today. I don't care what anyone says. And I am very proud to say I maintain a pro status in bowling on the Nintendo Wii. Some things not very many people know about me is that I can be judgmental, critical, and hypocritical at times. I struggle with reading my Bible every day, and I struggle with praying every day. So I'm a normal person. I don't want to come across as some theologian or a philosopher, because I'm not. I just want to share what God has laid on my heart. So before I get into that, I got an email from Kathy last week on Tuesday, and she said, "Would you be willing to speak next Wednesday?" And I said, "Who?" So I spent a lot of time praying, and really I was really worried this coming week or this past weekend about what I was going to talk about, because I had no clue. But since I've come up with something, so I hope I don't bore you all. So I've learned a lot at college. You know, I could talk all day about biology or educational theory in the classroom, how to handle misbehavior. I could tell you all I did last summer about grass, even. But that's on the wayside. I've learned a lot of other important lessons about life and about the Lord and about building the kingdom. So that's what I want to talk a little bit about today. And I've got 3 points. My first one is patience. Everyone has heard patience is a virtue. I don't need a show of hands, but I know everyone has heard that. My grandpa used to say patience and tolerance. He was a big fisherman, and he loved to work with wood. And his caveat, whenever I would get impatient when I could not catch even, you know, those little bluegills off the side of the dock, or I couldn't cut that piece of wood, he would sit me down and say, "Patience and tolerance," you know, and he would just leave it at that, and I'd be wondering what the heck he meant. So when I started thinking about patience, the dictionary of me, I would define it as putting yourself on hold. The last 4 years have really tested my level of patience. I came here as a freshman in the fall of 2004, and in the summer of 2005, my parents decided to move down. I grew up in upstate New York, so I had gotten used to an 8-hour buffer, and it went to an 8-minute buffer. Yeah. Sorry, Mom. I still love you if she's here. And that came with a lot of testing my patience, especially in... At that point in my life, I was pretty selfish about a lot of different things. I had gotten used to living on my own. I had gotten used to having my car all the time. It's a little thing, but they would call and need my car because my brothers needed to get around. And that tested my patience. It sounds like a little thing, but you know, it really goes a long way. Another venue I've learned a lot of patience in is my amazing girlfriend, Lindsay, who couldn't be here today. We have a long-distance relationship right now. Over the last 2 years, I've learned to put myself on hold for her needs, especially over the last 10 months or so when we've been apart for long periods of time. All we have is the telephone, and that gets tough. I don't know how many of you all have ever had to do that, but that's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, and it's tough to be patient with her. If she's talking my ear off or if I'm talking her ear off, you know, we have to be patient with one another. And again, it sounds like a little thing, but it really applies to every area of our lives. Patience is covered multiple times in the Bible. The one I like the most is in 2 Peter 1:5, and I'm just going to read that real quick. And this is in the passage about faithful and knowledge of Christ. And in verses 3 and 4, he talks about things that God has given us through his divine power that pertain to life. And so this picks up in verse 5, and it says, "And besides this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience, and to patience godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness charity," or love. So I promise I'll bring this all together at the end. So I'm going to move on for a moment, and then I'll come back to that. The second thing I've learned a lot about is empathy, and that's empathy with an E, not sympathy. So there is a difference between empathy and sympathy, even though some may not know that. Sympathy, again, my dictionary, I would define it as understanding someone's feelings. If my friend had a test that day, I'd say, "Oh, that stinks. I'm sorry you have a test, but I don't really feel it." Empathy is actually feeling someone's hurt, someone's joy. If, you know, a friend gets engaged, I would feel his happiness because of that relationship that we have. Empathy isn't easy. It requires a deep relationship. I wouldn't be able to empathize with someone I don't know because we wouldn't have that personal connection, whereas that's where sympathy comes in. So I feel like empathy is a step beyond into that deeper relationship. In the last 2 years, I've grown to be empathetic again with my amazing girlfriend, Lindsay. I've used her once already for an illustration, but it's that deep relationship that I'm talking about, and it was the easiest one for me to pull from, I guess. And like I said, that deep relationship is required. You know, when she has a bad day and I talk to her on the phone, I can feel her hurt and I hurt for her. You know, I would have a bad day. You know, my mood would start to change. And that's not a bad thing. I feel like it's a sign of maturity. And it's a very hard emotion to describe because it's very experiential, and married couples would understand it. If you are engaged, you might understand it. So it's one of those things that you grow into, and again, I promise I'll tie this all together. My third point, coming from patience into empathy, leads to selflessness, and it's a simple definition. It's extremely hard to do, so let's break it down. The word self means me, my desires, my wants, my needs, my feelings, my hurts, you know, anything that has to do with me. Lessness, I don't know what form of English that is. I took one English class here, but it's the lacking of self. So it's easy to understand what the word means. It might be the hardest thing on the face of the earth to do fully 100% of the time. I feel like patience and empathy lead to a life of selflessness, and they build upon one another and lead to this point of being able to project away from what I want towards what my neighbor wants or what my family wants or what Lindsay wants or needs even, not even just wants. And I'm not perfect. No one is perfect.
Duh.
You know, so like I said, selflessness builds off the first two, and the only truly selfless person I can think of in all of history is Jesus. And that's what the most important thing in the world is anyways, so why shouldn't these important lessons all point back to Jesus? And so I started looking at that. And I've come to the conclusion that these three things are things that help us become more like Jesus. And it might seem really simple when you hear it, but when I found it, or when I realized it last night at 11:30 when I was writing this down, I was like, oh, cool, I have something to talk about. So, breaking all this down, patience, empathy, and selflessness, they all stem from love. In 1 Peter, it said all these things lead to charity or love. I love my family, I love Lindsay, and they've all been in my illustrations. I couldn't even come up with anything else. I couldn't even come up with someone I can't say that I truly, deeply love to use as an illustration. And Jesus is the great lover, and therefore he was and is and continues to be those three things that, you know, we can pull from him. He was patient with everyone. I mean, I feel like one of the most profound patience illustrations of Jesus is in Luke chapter 2, when it's one of the very few references that we have to his childhood. And he's about 12 years old, and his parents make the trip to Jerusalem, and then they're on their way home, you know, after hours of walking, and they realize he's not there with them. And so they turn around and go back, and they get to the temple where he's listening to the teachers, and they say, "Where were you?" And he says, you know, instead of getting all defensive, and why do you always ask where I am? I mean, can't I get 3 minutes alone? You know, he doesn't do that. He says, well, where else would I be? You know, he's very patient with his parents. So why shouldn't we strive to be patient? If Jesus is willing enough at 12 to be patient with his parents, who are sometimes the hardest people in the world to be patient with, how come we can't do that? He was patient with his disciples. He answered calmly and fully every time. They may have been confused afterwards, but he was patient with them. He never got short-tempered. He never snapped. Or at least it's never in this book where the authority is. So even if someone came up with something else that said Jesus snapped this one time, I don't think I would believe it, but that's beside the point. You know, even in the garden, he asked them to pray for him while he went and prayed to the Father the night he was arrested to be crucified, and they fell asleep. Now, if I had come back and I had asked my 12 best friends who I loved dearly to pray while I went in sweat drops of blood for them, and I came back and they were all snoozing, I probably would have gone buck wild and dropped some elbows. But Jesus didn't do that. He didn't. Even when the soldiers came to arrest him, Peter cut off a man's ear. He was still patient with Peter. He said, "Why? No, that's not the way it's going to happen." He didn't snap. Jesus is patient. He was patient with the Pharisees, with Pilate, with the Romans. He never lost his temper, not once. He made them look foolish. He made them look childish, and he made everyone confused. And, you know, even to this day, I'm confused a lot. He didn't lash out even unto death. Jesus had true empathy. So I'm going to try and make a logical progression here, so someone yell if I'm not making any sense. It's logical to think that being equal with God, being on the same playing field, that they both hurt at the same things. Fair? Therefore, the things that grieve God would also grieve Jesus. And that means Jesus feels every hurt of God. Okay. So what does that mean? That means even though he was also fully human, so he knows every hurt that we have fully. He knows every desire, every temptation, every little thing that we struggle with every day. And that's what makes him the great empathizer. Excuse me. He's the great comforter and the great empathizer because of this fact. Because he is fully God and he knows what grieves God, and because he was fully human and he knows what we have to struggle with, he can meet us in the middle ground there. And that's why his testimony and his story is so fantastic. Because we know for sure, even just from a logical standpoint, even from a feeling standpoint, that he can meet in the middle somewhere. Like I said, he's the ultimate empathizer. He went to the cross because he felt God's hurt and didn't want us to grieve anymore. He's going to wipe every tear from our eyes. He's going to carry us when we can't stand. You know, I love the story of the footsteps in the sand or the footprints in the sand, and how you're walking along and then you realize there's only one set of footprints, and the person turns and says, "Lord, why weren't you with me in this time? Why weren't you there to carry me?" And the Lord turns to us, and in his great patience, he says, "I was there. I was carrying you." And it's like, oh, man. You know, why even try? So patience and empathizing leads me to the selflessness of Jesus. Like I said in the beginning, he's the only person in the history of the world who was truly selfless 100% of the time. I almost spilled the water. Everything in his testimony, everything in his message was about others. He never talked about himself except for when he was glorifying God through his ministry, and people could look at him and say, "This is the Son of God." Everything was about working with other people. Everything in the 3 years of his recorded trips throughout Israel, everywhere, everyone he's spoken to in the Bible focused on the children, sick, prostitutes, tax collectors, hypocrites, lepers, soldiers, jailers, prisoners, you know, the list goes on and on and on. He was always about other people. And again, like I said in the beginning, I'm nowhere near where Jesus is. None of us are. And if you are, I'd really like to talk to you because, you know, I feel like I can learn a lot from you about it. And that kind of brings me to the end of what I said, right, what I have to say right on time. And, you know, so I don't really have a nice, neat way to wrap this up. I don't have a little story. I don't have any limerick or poem or video or skit. And that's because when I was thinking about how I should close this, there really is no way to close it. This is a process. No one is ever going to be able to stand up here and says, "I am patient, I am empathetic, and I am selfless." You know, that's the end. I am ready to go to heaven on a chariot of fire. There's no end to it for us. It's a process. You know, and the only end is Jesus. And that's what's important.
Well, I don't have any really great stories that Emily didn't share, so I can just go ahead and jump right into the amazingness I will present to you. There was one random Friday afternoon in February, and I was meeting with a friend, and my eyes started hurting really bad. And in my mind, I was like, "Meredith, get over yourself, you're fine, whatever." And by the end of that evening, they were completely swollen, and I really couldn't see anything. So my friend took me to the emergency room, and we sat in there for about 6 hours for the emergency treatment. And after getting that accomplished, going to 3 pharmacies to find the right prescription, then we got pulled over for speeding on Nicholasville Road. So not only did I look completely stoned sitting in the passenger seat, but I also had a nice big bottle of prescription drugs in my lap. So I know this story could get a lot more interesting if I told you that we had to go to jail for the evening using our one phone call to call in our extensions, and which is a good thing because I'm the RLC, so you better be doing that. But that's not what happened. Instead, I woke up the next morning with hopes that the medication was going to help, but it didn't. I ended up not really being able to see for about 4 days, and like when I say not see, like it was very difficult. And they found a tumor in my eye. Don't know how it got there. It just popped up one day. So for those of you who saw me around campus that week, I was wearing an extremely attractive eye patch. No one made fun of me or anything, but I'm not telling you this for sympathy or anything like that. My ophthalmologist is extremely good looking, so so the weekly treatments that I get to go in for are very pleasurable experiences. Hope I'm allowed to say that in chapel. But up until like last week, I really hadn't regained all my vision. I squinted a lot. I couldn't really see a lot. Pretended like I could, but I couldn't. But things are getting better. It's fine. But I think there are probably a lot of stories that I could stand up here and tell you about my life, bad things that I've been through. I don't think that would necessarily make it any better of a testimony, though, or anything like that for God than somebody who could come up here and say that they were able to live their whole life serving and loving God. But I think that there is one story that I want to share, not my own, but of a man in the Bible named Bartimaeus. He's one of my favorite characters. I don't intend on naming one of my children after him or anything, but I do want to share his story, and it comes from Mark 10, 46 through 52, if you want to follow along. Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." They called the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling for you." Throwing his cloak aside, Bartimaeus jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want for me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. No, by no means was this a comparison to my situation. This poor man had it much worse off than I did. But I just thought it kind of would attempt to make the connection that I'm going to share with you. And so hopefully it does. If it doesn't, just keep smiling and nodding. Son of David is what Bartimaeus used for Jesus, which was a popular name anyone could use to call him as their Messiah. But I don't think that Bartimaeus was calling him this just because everyone else was doing it around him. But I think that he really knew Jesus was his Messiah. He doesn't have to be able to physically see Jesus, but he just knew that he was there. For the longest time, I don't think I needed to see either. I didn't need signs or miracles to come my way to increase my faith. I just always knew. I believed in the Bible, and I believed the life that came with being a Christian. But I think that gets more difficult. It definitely has for me. I wonder why I wake up some mornings and wonder, why isn't he personal with me anymore? I feel like he's so evidently working when I'm in community with believers or non-believers. That's when I can see him. But I feel like when it comes down to me seeing him in my personal relationship, I get really confused. I think there were ideas that I saw in other people when I first became a Christian, or Christian books that I read that were probably a mistake. And I let those ideas completely encompass my idea of what Christianity is, or just take over my beliefs, instead of letting Jesus come to me and accept me for who I was and how I was at that point. And I think it's kind of ironic that we accept Christ when we receive salvation, but that is the more difficult step sometimes, is to just break yourself and let him accept you where you're at. I don't think that there was ever really a time when Christ wasn't in my life or wasn't present and working. But there were a lot of times whenever I refused to see it. And I wish I had a really good answer or some great profound statement that someone with a PhD could come up here and tell you. But I definitely don't. I feel like to be able to really just see Jesus with your own eyes is something you have to trust in. I imagine Bartimaeus sitting there as the Lord came through the town. People were cheering and praising Jesus, and other people were too busy rebuking Bartimaeus himself. But his blind eyes continued to see Jesus. He didn't change throughout the circumstances of the situation. I guess, I don't know, I've asked myself this plenty of times, and I guess I can ask you. If you take away everything that you've read outside the Bible, or any examples you've seen other people about how they interact with Christ on a personal level, what do you have yourself? And that's where I've really been convicted, is just really making it my own. I'm not saying that Christ's character is going to change from person to person, but I am saying that with as different as we are and with as many different places with the Lord that we stand, our encounters are and should be different. Don't be scared to make sure that your encounter with him is unique, even if it doesn't seem to be what everyone else at Asbury is doing. I allowed a lot of things to keep me from seeing him for myself. I was seeing him for a community, for my non-believing family, or for whatever else. But my attempts to hide behind those things, they kept me from seeing everything that I should have started from. I think that just because I refused to open my eyes and see doesn't mean that Christ wasn't still hoping that I was going to come around, obviously. But it's really sad for me to look back and think of how many times I didn't do something I felt Christ wanted me to do or was embarrassed about whatever kind of personal relationship I had with him because it was different than other Christians were. And I would look at the other Christians and think, well, they have probably a stronger relationship than I do, so I need to change my ways. And I don't think that's the case at all. Whenever Bartimaeus received his sight and saw clearly for himself for the very first time, he did go and follow Jesus. The scriptures tell us that. So I don't really have anything else to say to you, but keep yourself in check with that. Make sure that you're not refusing to allow him to accept you and to come into your own personal sight. Because if you're seeing him clearly, I think that you will know what to do as well. So will you please pray with me? Father God, we just love you so much, and we thank you just for the opportunity to be here and just be surrounded in your love. I pray that you would just help us to go from this place today just to honor you and to love you. And Lord, help us not to be ashamed of anything that we are. It's in your precious name. Amen. You are dismissed.